Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:24 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time, excuse me, Standard Time, and today is December 19th. Well, if we take a look at the S&P 500, it was up nicely in here today, but not in this particularly dynamic manner. But the more important point is that there's been an acute lack of volatility over the last 3 months. We've had a hiatus in the trade war. The Brexit question looks increasingly likely to be resolved. Certainly Brexit is more likely than not to happen by the end of January. Then the brinksmanship will renew again ahead of negotiating a trade deal with the EU. And that is likely to be a much more aggressive negotiating tactic on this occasion than it was under Theresa May, not least because the people who are willing to not only threaten a hard Brexit, but willing to at least give the facade of following through are in power. But when we think about the fact that the S&P 500 spent most of the last 2 years doing not much of anything, we had the very acute pullback at the end of last year. We had an equally acute rebound in the first quarter of this year. And then it spent most of the 6 months in the middle of the year just doing not very much of anything. The clearest bullish signal was the upside key reversal at the beginning of June. And we can quite clearly see it there, where it went to a new reaction low during the week and then closed above the high of the previous week, doing so in a dynamic manner and following through in subsequent weeks on the upside. That was clear confirmation that we were getting support in the region of the trend mean. But what I think is perhaps more important is to look at what the consistency of this trend has been over the course of the last decade. We have had these lengthy consolidations. Then we've had these little pops on the upside, which come back to test the region of the moving average, and then we get these very persistent advances. This was exactly the same thing that we saw in 2016, where the market consolidated in the region of the trend mean ahead of the breakout. We had then a very clear upward dynamic, again another big upward move from the region of the trend mean. The market went sideways for a few months afterwards, but it continued to push on the upside. Each one of these impressive advances following these lengthy consolidations has been notable for the persistence of the move and the lack of volatility and the rather impressive advances that have been put in. I've seen more than a few commentators make exactly the same points. This kind of way of looking at the market and going back and looking at similar consolidations has become almost de rigueur. There have been more than a few people are looking at this breakout and thinking, well, this was a mini recession we've just been through, very similar to the fears we had in 2015 and 16, and now there is scope for additional upside with the removal of some of the risks that people have been worried about over the last few years. One thing we can certainly say is that the market is increasingly looking overbought relative to the trend mean. It's not far off 10% above the trend mean at present. We do anticipate that ranges are explosions waiting to happen, that the breakouts, when they occur, are likely to be surprising, and the surprises are likely to be on the upside. The other important point is that when something has been going sideways for a while, it will go overbought and stay overbought for a relatively prolonged period, because the way that these oscillators are calculated is based very clearly on what happened recently. And what happened recently was a fair share of ranging. So now we have the breakout. It's likely that we're probably going to see continuation of the pattern until we get the first very clear downward dynamic. And even then, the likelihood is that it will be the first mean reversion following this big breakout. I think one of the more important points to highlight is when we think about these, the commentary that's going on about the yield curve, it's up to almost 29 basis points. This is the highest it's been in just under a year. We had a mild inversion of the curve that was back in August. I think it is important to look at what was going on during the last inversion. The yield curve became inverted right at the end of 2005. We started to see it surging back above zero and really back above 50 basis points in 2007, and that offered at least a good lead indicator for trouble ahead. Now, if we go back and look at what exactly was the stock market doing in 2007, well, then we're presented with this trend that had persisted pretty much all the way through until July. By the time we got to the end of 2007, we'd had a loss of momentum, we'd had the failed upside breaks, and then it was trading back below the trend mean, but then it broke down. And it broke down right at the beginning of 2008. And the fact that the yield curve had continued to move higher, then that was an indication that we were in for a more difficult period in terms of the stock market action. Then, of course, at the time, I think it's also worth considering that if we were to try and identify what was the epicenter of risk, well, it was the banking sector. And banks had been underperforming for a pretty prolonged period by the time we got into the beginning of 2008. In fact, they had been accelerating down out of this this peak level by the time we got to the beginning of 2008. That kind of underperformance by the banking sector really should send warning signals up. Now, when we contrast what that represented compared to today, well, the banking sector is pushing on to new high ground. The stock market is pushing on to new high ground. There is a catch-up play going on with a significant number of global indices, most particularly mid-cap indices. The FTSE 250 is coming back up towards, or is at least holding this move to a new all-time high and pausing below the 22,000 level. When we look at the MDAX in Germany, it's been a source of relative strength, and it is also pushing on to new all-time highs. When we then look at the second section in Japan, then it has broken its downtrend. There was a very clear upward dynamic approximately 4 weeks ago, and it moved on to a new recovery high in here today. So that's all really quite positive. When we then look at other stock markets, India's market is pushing on to new all-time highs. There is a lot of commentary going on in the press about the new immigration laws that have been passed, but that is glossing over the very clear and impressive reform measures that have been announced by the Indian government over the course of the last 3 months. Everything from lowering corporate taxes to attempting to streamline the state-owned banking sector to trying to sort out the non-performing loans sector in the non-bank lending area. All of these are very welcome developments, and that is also against a background where there is a fiscal stimulus. So that should help to support inward investment. I think when we think about an emerging market, the outlook for the currency is usually something that people really do want to pay attention to. And the rupee remains really quite steady. It is still ranging around the 70 to 71 area, but it is not breaking lower. If it were to start trending downwards again, then we would be in, I think, a rather different scenario. I think it's also worth keeping an eye on some of these commodity-related currencies. The South African rand has broken out and is now trading stronger than the 200-day moving average. This has been, I think, in response to more bullish activity from the commodity complex. The Brazilian real is unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. We have the dollar coming down against it in here. The Australian dollar hasn't quite yet been able to break its downtrend, but it is coming back up towards the region of the trend mean. It's now testing the 69 cent level. If it can sustain a move back above 70, well, then we are back in a demand-dominated environment. Then the New Zealand market, or the New Zealand dollar, has pushed back above its trend mean. Now, it still has the sequence of lower rally highs. They've been in place for nearly 2.5 years. But as long as it can hold the move above 65 cents and improve upon it, then that is at least confirming near-term support in the region of the 2015 lows. It could potentially signal more than that if we see a continued rebound in commodity prices. And there has been a lot of speculation about what's going to happen with Mexico, not least with the favorable outcome, the potential for a favorable outcome to the NAFTA 2.0 negotiations. Well, the Mexican peso has rallied now to break the dollar's sequence of higher reaction lows evident since the middle of 2017. So this is a meaningful move. As long as it is sustaining that advance, then I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, the Mexican stock market was up in a dynamic nature over the course of the last 5 or 6 sessions, and it did give up some of that advance in here today. If it can sustain a move back above 45,000, then we are clearly back in a demand-dominated environment. At the moment, it is at least steadying from the region of the trend mean. If the peso starts to strengthen further from here, then the potential that Mexico is going to benefit both from the uptick in global growth, the potential for NAFTA 2.0 to be ratified by the U.S. Administration, that's all likely to be positive. And of course, if oil prices continue higher, that's also likely to be beneficial for the Mexican market. When we then think about what's going on in China, Hong Kong was in mildly negative territory in here today. It has held a sequence of higher highs and higher lows over the last 3 months. It does need to continue to hold that 26,000 level if support building is to be given the benefit of the doubt. When we then think about the Shenzhen B shares, there are no state-owned companies in this index, but there are certainly fewer of them. There are no banks in it, and it has bounced rather meaningfully over the last 4 sessions. It's back above the psychological 900-point level. There is the real potential here that we're going to see a rally back towards the sequence of lower rally highs around the 950-point level. If it can sustain a move above 950 points, then we can be thinking about the potential that this almost year-long downtrend has in fact ended. Oil prices have sustained the move back above $65, and it was not quite on its highs at the close, but at least it is trading back above the trend mean. Every time it has got above $65 over since June, it has failed. I think when we look at this over the medium term, there is the potential that oil prices will steady further as global growth, or the perception of the potential for additional global growth improves. I still think, though, that the price is in a long range between about $40 and $80. The price has to move higher for long enough to allow unconventional suppliers to hedge some of the more expensive sources of supply that they have, and $80 would go a long way towards getting that job done. Now, when we look at the government bond markets, U.S. 10-year treasuries are back towards the, on the yield at least, back towards the peak put in November. It has just about unwound all of the overextension relative to the trend mean. Now the big question is whether it is going to be able to sustain a move back above the 2% level. I rather think that it will. I think that what we're seeing with the resumption in relative strength from the commodity sector is that inflation pressures will likely begin to rise. The fact that you have IMO 2020 coming in January has the potential to represent an inflationary shock. It may be one-off in nature, however, but it is the kind of thing that will pump up prices in a meaningful manner. Then, when we look at the bond markets, they really do look overvalued. And particularly when we look at the spreads between the longer and the shorter end of the curve, well, we've got some really quite acute inversions in the UK, where the overnight rate is pretty much the same as the 10-year yield, which is a clear incentive to go out and borrow. Well, it does look like we're going to see an increasingly large number of national governments go out and borrow plenty of money to fund, hopefully, infrastructure and pro-growth strategies and less of the vanity projects. But the spending in the short term will be beneficial for economies just about everywhere, and also for commodity prices. Gold in here today was relatively unchanged and is just steadying again around this $1,450 area. Palladium, having eased back over the balance of the week so far, was in a little bit of positive territory. This is so far a relatively tight consolidation relative to the size of the pullbacks we've seen just over the last 12 months. It's going to have a significantly larger pullback or a much lengthier period of ranging in order to really confirm that it is. I think when we think about the outlook for palladium, there is big arguments out there. Some people are saying that the price can't go down. If we start to see that kind of commentary, it tells us that people are long and leveraged. If it were to pull back by more than, for example, $200, then that would be a larger pullback than we've seen since at least March. If it pulls back below the trend, mean we have a peak of near-term significance, or at least medium-term significance, we already have a peak of near-term significance. There is the potential that we could move into an even more accelerated advance. But this argument that palladium prices mean nothing to the total cost of a catalytic converter, that's exactly the same kind of argument that was being made about cobalt. And that did not stop the cobalt price from collapsing when additional sources of supply started to come in, and when demand for electric vehicles did not start to rise the way that a lot of the bulls had been expecting it to. When we think then about some of the other commodities, coffee prices had been going up in a very dynamic manner, but we are seeing now some volatility coming in, and it has broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. That does suggest that we have a peak of near-term significance and at least some consolidation going on. On the other side of the equation, we have sugar prices, which spent most of the year not doing much of anything, but now do appear to be pulling up and away from the region of the trend mean. It does look a little bit more impressive when we look at it on a daily basis. And this continues to look like a recovery scenario. When we then think about the soybean market, there's a lot of speculation about just how much, in terms of agricultural production, can China buy from the USA. There's also the bilateral agreements that it signed with Brazil, and how much is that going to inconvenience Brazilian producers of commodities. Soybeans, however, is coming back up towards this 950-cent level, and if it can sustain a move above it, well, then I think we can start to think about the outlook for a base formation completion. We're not there just yet. The very clear conclusion that anyone can reach by just simply looking at the quantity of money that is being produced, then it is the central bank balance sheets have been ranging now for most of the last year. There are two important, important points about the size, the total size of central bank balance sheets. The first, of course, is the quantity of money that's getting printed, and the injection of liquidity into U.S. repo markets that has been achieved over just the last couple of months is particularly impressive. But the more important point is that for the preceding few, I think probably about 18 months, central bank total assets had been trending downwards. That downtrend has now been broken, and it's coming back up towards the 20 trillion mark. The other supporting fact for global liquidity would be additional dollar weakness. Well, the dollar was off its highs, off its lows in here today, and it's coming back up towards the region of the trend mean. There have been occasions in the past when it has pulled back below the trend mean and popped back above it and continued to trend higher, although in a relatively modest fashion. If this is one of those occasions, then it is going to have to push back above the trend mean in a dynamic manner. But the reality is that the Federal Reserve is now cutting interest rates, or at least has cut interest rates three times, although it is likely that they're done with that for the moment. But adding in excess of $300 billion in the space of a couple of months is very different from withdrawing supply of dollars. So we are in less of a supply inhibited environment today than we would have been 6 months ago. And I think that is one of the more important points pointing towards some additional weakness in the dollar. And then Bitcoin has bounced over the last couple of days, but wasn't quite able to hold on to its rebound in here today. If we look at the consistency of the trend, it has encountered resistance in increments of 1,000, one being lower than the last, all the way between June and October. Now, the pace of the decline has picked up somewhat. It needs to at least sustain a move back above the trend mean in order to question the overall downward bias. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.